story about the Pharisee and the tax collector only appears in the Gospel of Luke. It's not in the other three Gospels. And it's very Lucan in the sense that in Luke's Gospel, Jesus seems to be telling a number of parables, stories about the outsiders being in and the insiders being out. So the Pharisee was an insider. You know, everything he said about himself was true. The Pharisees were probably the most respected people in Jewish society at the time of Jesus. And sure, there were some bad Pharisees, but most of them were good men who really loved the law and tried to obey it to the letter, and they tried to encourage others to do so also. There's really nothing all that wrong with what the Pharisees were and what they did, for the most part. They were on the inside. And so when the Pharisee goes into that inner part of the temple where others weren't allowed, it wasn't because he was wrong in doing so, because he was an insider. He had the right to go into that place. And the tax collector did not, and so he doesn't go to that place. Now, tax collectors were on the outside. You notice how in the Gospels it's always tax collectors and sinners. They're doublet, you know. Tax collector equals sinner. Why were the tax collectors on the outside? Why were they outside the law, outside the culture, hated, despised? Well, Israel at that time was an occupied territory of the Roman Empire. And tax collectors, the tax that they were collecting was for the Roman Empire. Hated by the Jewish people, hated by Israel. So they're kind of traitors. They've sold out for the money. They're collecting the tax that nobody wants to pay. But then not only that, the Roman government did not pay them to collect the tax. They had to charge extra above and beyond the tax in order to make their money. And some of them really gouged very well and became wealthy. And so you can understand why they were despised by other Jews. So this tax collector, he's on the outside. And like in so many Lucan stories, the outsider in and the insider out. At the end of the story, Jesus says, the first one went away unjustified, and the second one went away justified. Kind of a surprise to his hearers at that point. So there's a lesson about humility here. There's a lesson about our willingness to recognize that we don't have anything of our own, that everything we have, everything we are, comes from God. And so there's a sense in which we really can't take credit for it. And it's there for service. It's there for to be given up, to be spent on others for the gospel, for the truth, for God. But there's another thing going on here in these readings. In that reading from the book of Sirach, you have this notion that the poor are heard by God, despite the fact that sometimes they doubt that. Now, there's just something about being human where the rich are considered good. They got to be rich because they're loved by God. And they did the right things, and it turned out successfully for them. Therefore, they're good people. And we've always known here in America, where everything is kind of evened out and everyone, you know, everybody has a chance to be president, you know, that we have a democracy. We know that the rich aren't necessarily good. And yet we find ourselves buying into that anyway. And we know also that the poor aren't necessarily lazy. And the poor aren't necessarily bad, but we buy into that sometimes, and we find ourselves looking down our nose at poor people as if this is somehow their fault. And sometimes it is, but sometimes it isn't. And so sometimes the poor are made by the society to feel less than, to feel unworthy, and to feel like maybe even God doesn't hear their prayers. And that's the point of that first reading. While God shows no animosity toward the rich, he He also hears the cry of the poor. And a beautiful poetic image, their prayers pierce the clouds and reach where they are going. And if they wait patiently, their prayers will always be answered. Well, for us, sometimes we're on one side or the other of this quotient. Sometimes we're haughty and proud about what we've accomplished, what we've earned, what we've done. And sometimes we're needlessly prideful. And sometimes we feel confident that we're on the inside, that we're the worthy ones. You know, we're the ones not only who may have been successful in life, but we're the ones who are here every Sunday, by golly, you know. And we look down our nose at those who aren't here. We're the insiders. We've received our first communion. We've received confirmation. We're here every Sunday. We're the Pharisees in both the good sense and the bad sense. But then there's another sense in which most of us at one time or another feel sort of outside. We don't feel as successful as we would like to be. We don't feel as worthy as we would like to feel. And sometimes we wonder if God answers our prayers. Sometimes when life deals out its tragedies to us, its losses, its failures, sometimes when life can be unfair, we feel like we're unheard. So pick the day that you are today. You know, pick the feeling that you're feeling today and hear these wonderful words. The words of criticism, because maybe we're too prideful, but loving criticism. You know, when God criticizes, it's always with love. When God reveals you to yourself, when God shows you right in your face what is wrong with you, it's never experienced as condemnation. It's experienced as forgiveness, as reconciliation, as peace. But if you're in that place this morning where you're feeling outside, know that God has a special love for you and that God is hearing you and knows exactly what you're feeling and is feeling it with you. St. Paul, in that second reading, says that his life has been poured out like a libation. He's in prison at the time he's writing this, and he's pretty convinced that this is his last prison term. He was in prison several times, but at this point he's convinced that this time he's going to die, and he's going to be killed. And so he's writing to Timothy, one of his disciples and one of his loved ones, encouraging him to keep the faith going. And he says, my life has been an offering. I have become so one with Christ that it's no longer Paul, but Christ living in Paul. I have become a new being, a new person. The old Paul is dead. The new Paul is Christ living in him. So one that to see Paul is to see Christ. Now, Paul, without any arrogance, says that. And he occasionally says things like, follow me as an example. That's kind of arrogant to say, look to me about how you should live. But he really isn't saying, look to me, Paul. Look to me, Christ living in Paul. You see, what happened to Paul is he got so converted that this just became his whole life. He did pour out his life like a libation. Interesting little symbol going on there. In Greek pagan religion, they sometimes poured out expensive wine on the ground. And libation, you know, that's drink, okay? And it was a sacrifice, it was an offering to the gods to take the most expensive thing and just throw it on the ground. It's a way of saying, you know, I lavishly give back to the gods. And Paul, when he says, I've poured out my life like a libation, I haven't poured out some wine, I poured out my soul, I poured out my body, I poured out my being. And he does that without any regret. In fact, he says, this is what gives my life meaning. I mean, my whole life is so wrapped up in this that I don't even have to consciously decide to pour out my life. It's just who I am by this point. And in that sense, he is a wonderful example. He's an example of what we would like to be. So involved in this gospel project, so involved in the life of God, having God so in me and myself so in God that nothing else matters, that my whole life is about this project alone. And you know, we celebrate that ritually in the Mass here every Sunday. In the Eucharistic prayer, which we'll pray in a few minutes, may we become an acceptable offering to you. In other words, the offering that we are giving to the Father this morning is not just the offering of Christ on the cross, but it's myself laid on the altar along with him. I become a pleasing offering. Not the change out of my pocket, not the basket of food for the poor, not the bread and wine. I mean, it is all of that, but primarily it's me. And so every Sunday we have an opportunity to at least ritually become like Paul, to say, this is all I'm about. This is my life. This is everything to me, and I give it all back to God in thanksgiving.